Hey, Harry, I heard this young Jewish boy on the radio, on BBS radio, and oh my God, the young Jewish boy talking about stuff about that was bothering me. About he was talking about the condescending the rabbis and everything, but he was making a kind of sense, and I think I want to listen to him. Yochman, Alon, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Talking about the Prophet Muhammad and the Quran and Allah, I was feeling like we need to call a fatwa and call a mujahideen and jihad his ass. But after listening to him, he all made sense. Islam is peace, God's peace, Allah's peace. I think I want to listen to him. Hey there, BF. I was listening on the BBS radio the other day and listening to their Jew boy talking all that stuff about Jesus, our Lord Savior. And, talking about how what he really meant about love and tolerance and all. And first I was going to call up Jerry Falwell and everyone else and, deal with him. But you know what? We need to walk in the name of Jesus and what he was talking about. And so I think I'm going to listen to him. Well, hello, everybody. This is Andrew Fetter. And this is I'm hosting the show When the Pigs Fly. I don't know if you're familiar with who I am. I am the author of When the Angels Have Risen. And I sort of want to recap on some of the issues I had spoken up earlier, my last show 2 weeks ago. And first of all, I want to thank BBS Radio for producing my show here. And I also want to thank all the guests. Now listening, and the future guests who will be listening in the future. Well, all I want to talk about is, and it's recapping a little bit on the organized religion, what I was talking about between, the darkness and the light side, when you're walking to which path it's walking into, and the relationship of organized religions. Because it brings up an issue I just saw the other day, and I'll get to that. And it was, first of all, I want to bring a recap that, reiterate that, basically, when somebody walks into the dark side and doing things very negatively, doing things in the shield of hate and projecting ignorance and violence and intolerance, that's basically walking into the dark side. And when you're walking toward the light, that's doing something within love, seeking wisdom, truthfulness, and having tolerance, and of course charity. So what I'm bringing up to that sort of bothered me was actually relationship with happening in some of the issues in the Middle East, and not about Iraq right now, but about the Israelis and the Palestinians. But what I saw, and it's still happening again, I remember back in the 90s, there were books placed out by the two children from the Palestinian Authority to their kids in schools, teaching them historical events. And not just historical books, but also other literature as well, as a very almost like nursery rhymes, telling kids to be proud to be a suicide bombers and violence and hatred. And this is, of course, like I said, toward the dark, against not something of loving, not in Islam, not in the name of Allah, not in God, but the opposite end. And they're still teaching books calling about the wiping out of Israel, wiping out Jews, don't even place it on the map. And that's not really, talking about, amicably wanting peace. If you don't teach their kids somehow having a relationship with your neighbors and love and kindness, how can you expect that there's going to be ever peace? It's you're basically integrating the kids all the way to be hate. And why is that? Because they're trying to project the same thing, the same negative cycle that goes on and on. And for every action, there is a reaction, They're even in their books, which is another thing, which their history books, they conveniently leave out the Holocaust. They mention World War II, the Nazis, And the Holocaust is not even talked about. I mean, you're talking about 6 million Jews and 4 million other people. That's almost 10 million people gone because within the World War II because of the Nazis and the likes of them. So why isn't this not put in their book? That would be like in the United States, we suddenly conveniently leave out our destruction of and taking of Indians' land and killing and the murders of Indians, including like Pan Creek and et cetera. It'd be like in America, leaving out the convenient story of the slavery of blacks and the injustice done to them, even up through the 1960s and the racism that still continues. It'd be like conveniently, let's leave that out of history books. My question is, why would they leave all this stuff out? You know, it would be interesting if they left that, you know, showed what the injustice and why certain things that happen and why, because it's an integral part of their history of what happened with two peoples moving into the same area, which I'll get into next week when I discuss the Israeli and Arab dilemma. So, my question is, knowing that these books are being produced, and these books are being, and this type of education of hate to the Palestinian children, why is this not being spoken about by, let's say, President Carter or other people who are supposed peaceniks? Are they just a facade of peace? I mean, they're so critical, you know, and I understand why they want to be critical of Israel, but there's never a very equal or even a real showing a blanket truth, showing the a root of a, one of the issues of the problem, which is hate and where it's coming from and how it's being utilized. I don't hear this from any of the peace groups, the Peace Now, etc. Even on blogs such as Desert Peace, I don't hear any of that stuff, which sort of surprises me. Again, real critical of Israel, or how come you're not critical of them? So that was just my question. You know, they don't get critical of Hamas, the Fatah, and the PA, or even the Palestinians themselves. You know, and it just shows why they're what happens when a people are consistently being turned to walk into the dark side, do things hateful and spiteful. I remember 9/11 when over 3,000 people were killed. They're rejoicing in the streets in West Bank and Gaza. You know, that was sickening. You know, I don't think, you know, when a Katusha rocket lands and hits into and kills some people, innocent children, or a bomb blows up a bus in Tel Aviv, you know, you'll see a rejoicing of murder. I don't think, and this is, you know, you can say what you want about Israelis, but you don't see Israelis when a bomb hits into and kills accidentally kills a bunch of people in like a village, like happened during the Lebanese war, and you see them rejoicing in the street. On the contrary, they're feeling bad about it. They're going to investigate. People didn't run up and jump and down because it's something, you know, being educated toward peace, toward loving your neighbor, to tolerance. It has to be a two-way street, not just one side. So if there's only one side not doing it, you know, that's not, you know. And where is the human rights groups such as Amnesty International regarding this subject? You know, and why aren't they getting into the very essence of human rights when one side is, or party, is calling for the genocide, utilizing violence in itself as a means, and not talking about that and bringing that up. And even though there's those that disagree with the hateism and fascism, nobody's standing up and talking about that. Even if you're a Palestinian and you want to talk about how bad that is, you're quickly disposed of. You won't hear too many Arabs or Palestinians speaking up on behalf of Israelis or talking of a true peace in a real sense. But I think it's sort of ironic, calling Zionism racist when basically Zionism is saying about Jews going back to live in Israel. How is that Zionist? How is the Zionist being racist? And it is fundamental to Judaism, which I'll get into next week. But it's the truth of who is the real racist, who is real the fascist. Isn't it not Hamas, Fatah, Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah, the Islamic Republic of Iran, which promotes their hatred in their books, in their newspapers, on their TV, to their children, to their people. A final solution, a Hitler solution to the Jews, and then eventual Islamic control of Middle East and eventually Europe. Isn't that sort of like, oh yeah, isn't that what Hitler tried to do, but in a different way? Isn't that sort of the same thing? So they've lied and distorted the name of Allah. They just died and lied about the name of Muhammad. This is walking into the dark. It's the same lie the crusader lied and blasphemed Jesus' name and murdered and killed Muslims and Jews alike. For like I say, Allah is great. Praise be Allah. Praise be God. Enough of the lies. Enough of the hate. And those who truly call themselves progressive and liberal should stand against the fascism of today. The distorted Nazi-like Islam. The distortion of Islam, but that is not Islam. And say about those clerics who stand on their preacher and preach against their fellow man. As Malcolm X had said, Islam is to recognize all men and all races and all peoples as brothers and sisters and not of hate. So quit the lie. And like I said, praise be Allah and praise be God. For we are all of Allah. We are all of God. And you, cleric, the imam of lies and deceit, you lie in the name of Allah. Therefore, every action will be a reaction. And so your game will end with the sword of love that will eventually show what is true. For the light of Allah and the light of God will bring truth on you. And may the brothers and sons of Ishmael, in the name of Abraham and his house, and peace will be in Israel and Palestine, in spite of the lie of the Iman, in spite of the lie of Hamas, in spite of the lie of Fatah. Because in the truth of love of Islam, the true Muslim will embrace and love toward his younger brother, the Jew, the son of Isaac, and the house of Abraham. For like it always has been said in Islam, for the one who kills one man as if he has killed the whole world, and for whoever saves that man's life as if he saved the whole world. And as the prophet Ezekiel has said, Israel is man. So on that note, I'll move into my next subject. Run, Gore, run! Of course, global warming. Now, I don't know about you and me, but it sure does get awfully hot lately and awfully cold. Because, you know, I'm calling here from Las Vegas, by the way. That's where I'm doing my show from. You know, Las Vegas, where everything happens. Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, including its money, your money. But you can obviously see the changes and the problems of our the temperatures, the weird weather. I remember being interviewed for my book with somebody in Connecticut, in a radio show in Connecticut, and this was the middle of, like, January, and it was in the 70s, and Vegas, it was freezing. We were in our 30s, and it was so strange, Connecticut in the 70s. And this is not just a coincidence. This is not just the weird weather just by chance. And the floods that we've happened and unusual weather patterns that have increased. And then El Niños. You know, I put on my information thing on the website so you guys can check it out. But if you ever go to, it'll give you a clear understanding of the clear picture of what global warming is. And I know there's some people who try to be critical and say, oh, well, you know, global warming is sort of a natural thing. It's part of Earth's sort of evolution. or is it? You know, we've had our ice ages and the mini ice age. But the facts really are laid out, and there's no question. Fundamentally, most scientists agree, including a lot of NASA scientists, even though they have been stifled by, and it's been proven stifled by the Bush's administration, by Bush and all his colleagues, about the situation of global warming and how we are the causes of the global warming effect, which is causing our greenhouse effect, which is can disastrously change and affect our environment. So why is this, if it's so obvious, why isn't really anything done about it? There was the Kyoto Treaty, which we had originally agreed to, which is, by the way, I put on the site as well. You guys can connect on it. You can always Google it. It's the 1997 treaty that was signed back in, I believe it was in December of 1997. But Bush conveniently pulled out of it. He said it was not good for economics. Well, what good is economics if you don't have a planet left? What does it mean if you have a big bank account and there's no people even to buy goods, or your environment's so disastrous? What does money matter if you don't even have an earth? It's like, I'm dead, but I have a lot of money in my bank account. It's retarded. It's like, I live not about 90 miles away from Las Vegas. They've been digging, first of all, millions and billions of dollars to dig a hole that turns out to be porous, that turns to being an ex-volcano, because they want to stuff a whole bunch of our nuclear waste into that little hole. That's their approach, without real science. And then they fabricate the science. And what is it, when they know it's all wrong, what's it all about? Oh, it's all about the money. It's all about the Benjamin. They have little concern of what might happen in the future. And they're still going to have problems with, you know, they don't look at global warming as an economical problem. It is a world problem. It is a human problem. So, like I was talking about, I mean, I remember last summer I saw The Inconvenient Truth, and I highly recommend it. That movie actually very methodically laid out our situation on our planet, and not colorized it, not made it more than what it is or isn't, but methodically showed scientifically with pictures and documentations and temperatures and where this is happening. And like I said, you can always go to, I hooked it up, you can always Google global warming or go to the Science and Museum, which is called, the Koshland Science and Museum website. I hooked it up by a link directly from the information page on the website on BBS on my site. You just go to the information. I've hooked it up there. As well, again, the Kyoto Treaty, you can read for yourself. It's quite detailed, but it's very simple. And, of course, they added inside the Kyoto Treaty to, the effects, you know, try to incorporate developing countries. You know, and Bush's biggest concern was, oh, well, you know, what are we going to do about China and what are we going to do about India? Well, yeah, you bring them into it. Hello? Duh. You know? They're part of the problem now, too. You know? And let me give you an example of what global warming's like. You know, so you guys, and I don't sound condescending, but it's like, let's say we have a big old room, and there's one dude who's smoking a big old cigar. Just say he's like, he's America. And then another guy over on this side, he's England, he smokes a cigar. And then a guy in Germany and France and Japan, and eventually China and India and Australia, and you got all these people smoking cigars in this room. What happens in that room? Doesn't it sort of hard to breathe? And then it's affecting everybody in there who doesn't even smoke, including the people who do smoke. So it's sort of like the same thing. And basically, like, what global warming is basically the cause and effects of creating within what's called the carbon cycle, which is a natural rotation of carbon dioxide, you know, from mammals and other species breathing out the carbon dioxide into our atmosphere, and plants bring it in, and there's a rotation of it and through, you know, basic biology. But what's happened is we've had where now, due because of added effects and variations. Now, of course, you know, there's variations from solar, orbital, oceanic, volcanic. You know, Helen, when Mount Helen blew up, that have an effect. But a consistent change, consistently, constantly spewing out stuff and changing it, is the fluorocarbons and other methanes and other gases which directly affect. We have thousands upon thousands, and most of it's coming, a lot of it's coming from the fossil fuels that are being burnt. The open coal burnings without having any cause or having some sort of filter system to stop the release of those gases from coal. So these are all affecting our world, because what happens is that it's almost like a blanket. Now, we have, like, a certain rays that come out from the solar rays that are hitting Earth that bounce up, and some of it's maintained, which keeps our pattern on our Earth within a certain, almost like an ecological pattern of atmospheric pressures, which then gives us, you know, some of the warmth and natural cold and whatnot. But when you start changing that blanket, make it a little thicker, so then less leaf, that becomes like what they call the greenhouse effect, and therefore warming Earth, which melts, or warming Earth, you're going to end up melting the ice packs on the polars. And so when those ice packs melt, then they chain react, changes the temperature and cause a reaction within our own oceanic levels and all oceanic patterns as well. And I can go on and on in very detail of that, you know. And from my science background, the only thing back in the days when I studied at UC Davis and worked in the Mann laboratories, because I had worked with in the cloning and molecular biology things, because that was what I was involved with. But it gave me at least some basis of biology. And today, of course, I was so far advanced from then. That was like 30 years ago. But it's the basics of life, and, you know, we're changing that. And it's all about the dollar. It's all about economics, but the hell with economics if we don't have an Earth. So what can we do? You, me, the average person, drive less, watch whether, you know, what we do. And then there's also always the political thing, too. Speak up, get behind the issues. And this is where I was talking about, you know, my last show about the light and the dark. This is something of lightness, you know, the love, loving your earth, loving, you know, fellow man. This is love, caring about the earth, the root that we're part of, that life, the tree of life that we're stuck in. Because we're all connected. We're all human. We're all a team. We may all have different leaves and different shadows, but see, we're all affected. You know, does it really matter if whose border is where? If there's no planet, whose bank account is a little bit further? I have more toys than you do if we don't have a real planet. And what about our kids and our grandkids? What are we going to leave to them? Isn't that pretty narcissistic if we're going to basically crap in our own woods and then leave that crap for our kids? That's pretty gross. That's pretty disgusting what we would leave for our own kids. Instead of making a world better for them, better for their future for them. Of course, ironically, in the spiritual sense, we do reincarnate, so basically we're handing it back to ourselves down the line when we die and then we come back. But on this physical planet, is that giving respect? One thing I acknowledge, it's fascinating, which I love about the Native American Indian spirituality, how they have they show a great respect to Mother Earth. I remember hanging out with some of the Shoshone and other friends of mine and friends of mine who were Lakota and Iroquois and Navajo, But they all had the same spirituality about what this Mother Earth, how we have to, you know, when they nurture this earth and they say thank you to the earth for what it's giving to them. And then when they kill, let's say, for example, a buffalo or a deer or whatever animal, and they were, you know, whatever type of retrospect, how they did live, then they would still say thank you and feel sorry for that animal they just killed, because they know that's part of the earth and they respect the earth that they're living on. And that's sort of the sense that I believe that we need to change our thought patterns into reality, because they were more or less in reality of our planet, if you come to think of it, because this is what feeds us. This is our mother. It's what we suckle from, whether it's the piece of bread that you stick in your mouth, or the milk that you drink, or the steak that you want to eat, or the fish that you want to eat, or the sushi you eat. Doesn't matter where, or the rice, or the barley. I mean, this is our earth. This is what's us. So it's all about the Benjamin. It's all about the money thing. You know, and like I said before, they threw billions of dollars to Yucca Mountain. What for? To dig a little hole to stick some nuclear waste instead of worrying about people in poverty, worrying about our ecological situation with global warming, which I know for they could probably change that in a heartbeat, because I know there's the technology to change our energy source, but they can't figure, because the energy source that's out there, and this can be also verified, is so economical, there's no way for them to make a buck out of it, the buck they've been making. I mean, if you can get an energy source that doesn't even cost a penny as opposed to $2-3 here in the U.S. and in Europe, $8 for a gallon of gas, could you imagine having the energy source of a penny, 2 pennies, 3 pennies? Because that's probably our technology, what we really do have. But they can't figure a way to stick it in the system so they can make a money. In doing so, it affects everybody here. And I'm surprised that, you know, Run, Al, Run hasn't shown this. Because this is out there. It's all around the world. I don't know why it hasn't been pushed out. And maybe, you know, the American government corporations are so tied in, and the energy companies are so tied in, keep this lid on it. And the reason why I say this, because I remember back in the 70s when there was an energy crisis, and I remember UC Davis, they were discovering and develop a plant that can be utilized instead of gas, and it grows in the desert, and all of a sudden Chevron took the patent of it and it disappeared. And then I remember there, back in the same token, within the same year, and this was back in 1977 and 78, in Liverpool Laboratories in Berkeley, they developed a battery that lasts for almost a long, long time, a light bulb that almost doesn't go out, lasts forever. And all of a sudden, GE bought the patents, and uh-oh, what happened to that? So it's basically all about the money. And then the other thing comes in the moral issue. Where are all the priests, the ministers, the pastors, the rabbis, the mullahs, who stand that they are holding up the shield of good, and that they are the following God's way? How come they're not voicing their mouths about global warming? Why aren't they speaking up? Are they also worried about their own little petty issues? Like here in the Christian right, is so worried about, God forbid, if a gay couple gets married, like who cares? Or about abortion, a woman giving a woman a choice, which is a whole other thing. And so the bigger issue of global warming, because it is more thrown in our face here. You know, it's almost like a cause and effect. I think some things are set up to give humanity choices and people choices. It's like Bush had his chance. He was anointed president. Believe me, I was pissed off as hell the way he became president. And then 9/11 happened. And then there was an opportunity, literally by God in the universe, handing to him an opportunity, like we all have choices. He could have been one of the greatest presidents there ever was. He was handed the mantle. I mean, come on. They gave him, here you go, George, go after the terrorists. Go after those bad, you know, those crazy people. Go after Al-Qaeda. So he went in Afghanistan. And he was doing, and he had the whole world behind him. But then he had his end game. And they utilized and manipulated it and got us into the Iraqi situation and then divided the house, divided people, either with us or against us in the Iraq war and so on and so on. So here we are. The world is presented an opportunity again. You know, and I basically believe this is the opportunity given to people and the humanity of the whole thing here. Now you're going to see you're all together, you're all the same. You're all a one. You're all affected by the same cause and effect. And maybe this could be a change, a start, besides, I think, down the line, which I'll get into another day with regarding extraterrestrials. But what we are as a humanity whole, yes, we are Jews and Christians and Muslims and non-whatever, Buddhists, Shintoists, black, white, green, yellow, blue, purple, Mexican, American, whatever. But take that all out, what we are. We're animals. We're humans. We bleed. We eat. We have kids. We die. We all die. So we're all human. We're all the same. So maybe this is an opportunity for us to unite, to do something about our global effect. And now I point to, again, where are all the clerics in this? Why aren't they telling their peers and their constituency and their ears who are listening to their voices? And where are all the leaders around the world, black, white, green, yellow, talking about this situation? Because this is a very fundamental situation. It's affecting us all. It's not about the Benjamin no more. It's not about the economics no more. We do have the technology to do that. We can set up the technology. Can you imagine the technology put into effect, how much money saved, but the profitability down the line? But there's the fear factor. And, you know, it's an interesting thing that I like to point out, which I've never brought up before in the last time I had my show, regarding people who choose to walk toward the dark side. Because their own product, their own tools, such as fear and guilt, that they throw on other people and on the mass, they actually get enveloped within their own tool. They themselves have a fear. They themselves have a guilt. So it's like the person who has a whole bunch of money in their bank and, you know, and they're fearing that they might lose a penny. Or make a little bit more. And you know what? They can put the money in. They can still live pretty good. But they still have that fear. God forbid I won't have another mansion. Because once you get beyond a certain threshold of being wealth, beyond two mansions, three mansions, a private jet, what is more money? More, just more power. Because what do they use that money for? To utilize to control more their situation. So maybe it's a fear of loss of power, which is also an illusion. And by the way, fear is an illusion. There's no such thing as fear. It's like there's the famous old story of there are two worlds, and when we come onto this planet on Earth, we're walking down a very narrow bridge. And though it is narrow, it's an illusion that it's narrow. That if you fall off, you can't fall off on that bridge because it's an illusion. Therefore, there is no fear. Nothing's going to happen. You can't fall down and hurt yourself. You still get back up. Your spirit never dies. That is eternal. That is your immortal soul. It lives forever. You're just your embodiment for that quick period of time of 80, 100 years, you know, whatever, 60, 70 years, God forbid, less, you know. You still, it's a quick life, but your soul remains. That 21 grams of energy is still out there. But again, where are all the people? I remember Gord getting his little Oscar. Run, Al, run! And how that picture, you know, that started another, maybe, a momentum. But how long are we so short, have such short memory loss that we don't realize the importance of that, of what is in front of us? And I hope this continues. You know, that maybe broadening and pushing. I know Bush has changed his speech. Oh, yeah. I remember 6 years ago. Well, we need more scientific research about whether there's global warming or not. In other words, we need 6 more years so we can make more money on it and don't worry about it. It's like today, most of the states, especially on the West Coast and, on California and whatnot, a lot of them have already entered in their own agreements amongst other states about trying to implement laws and, whatnot to help, you know, change the pattern, you know, to help control the global warming and actually reverse it. And it's ironic that I live in a state, in Nevada, that we have such a backward governor. I don't even want to get into it because I'm afraid I might get sued talking about his assault case the week before his election. And I can't believe how he could be, he was elected. But he is acting so ignorant. He says the same words Bush had said 6 years ago. I think we need to do a study on it. In Nevada? Who is he? He's not a president. He's a governor. We need a study whether global warming is really done. How ignorant? Is the world flat? But why is he saying this? Oh, well, because economics? And it's sort of funny because here in Nevada, you know, talk about energy source. Right in front of you, you maybe drive into Las Vegas during the heavy winds. Can you imagine putting the wind farms across the desert along the I-15 or anywhere else? There's such blanket desert here with massive winds. Just from that alone, how much energy could they retrieve? Just from wind and setting up wind farms. I remember driving up to Northern California, you can see a whole bunch of wind farms. And there's a lot more wind here in Nevada, you know. I know they use a lot of light here to light up the strip. But here we have a guy, Governor Gibbons, who is walking so much in the dark that he sticks his head in the hole like an ostrich and says, we need to do research. If there really is global warming. Come on. So my thing is, when are people going to open their eyes and do something about it? When are our leaders going to speak about actually doing something about it? Enough of the rhetoric, enough of the talk. Doesn't achieve anything. Don't throw out a new line. I can throw lines, you throw lines, we all throw lines. But doesn't really achieve anything. We need to move forward. And that includes the clerics out there. They need to speak out. If they're going to be representing a spiritual sense of morality, then there's the moral question. Where are your morals when it comes to the planet, Mother Earth, nature? And I know they've talked like nature being sometimes evil in Christianity. That's why they turn Pan into the devil. That's another story. But nature is us. We are part of nature. In Hebrew, they say, like, your body is called nefesh, which is one part of your soul, which is the same like the Hindus and the Buddhists that say your outer shell. When you die, that part is still part of the soul within the planet. So when you die, that's why, you know, everybody, different religions look at the body when it's dead as something very spiritual, because it is part of nature. Is part of our connection to this earth. So we must take care of our earth. That shows our spiritual truth, you know, our growing, our love of God. And there's now coming to another issue, now that I spoke about my piece about global warming. But again, for all those, you can always check Google global warming, check it out, get involved, find out more stuff, information, what you can do, the little things that can be done. Speak up, send letters, send emails, talk to your co-workers, talk to those of you if you're in a church or a synagogue or a mosque or a temple, or you're just hanging out with a friend at a club. Talk about it, deal with it, find out what you can do about it. I mean, I'm going to try to find out what I can do about it. I think everybody should try to do something about it. And hopefully that down the line, that also includes, you know, our leaders and pushing our leaders and say something to your leaders, the Congress. Iraq is important. Poverty is important. But I tell you, if we don't got no earth, who cares about Iraq? Who cares about poverty if you don't have an earth? You know, if it continues on the global warming pattern they are, you can check it out. Basically, Florida will be underwater. There's not going to be much of an Orleans. All the West Coast, East Coast cities will be eventually underwater. The Mississippi will rise so beyond that even St. Louis will be underwater. How many millions of people will be under in that situation? There's already islands in the Pacific that are disappearing, whole nations that are slowly disappearing because of the sea levels rising. Yeah, oh, it's only a foot, it's only an inch. But as that keeps on going higher and higher, and that's that 1 inch, and there's a high tide, when the waves come up, and it gets during the winter storms, that comes even higher, what happens to the coastlines? What happens to erosion? What happens to the cities along it? Oh, yeah, and there's the economical cost for those who didn't even think about that. They get wiped out, the Katrinas. I don't know if Katrina is directly or indirectly. That's a question for scientists, but I personally see a pattern. Yep, we didn't have too many hurricanes last year, but who knows what will happen this year. You know, we do have disasters, but there is a pattern. It's right in front of us. We just have to look and see and do something about it. Run, Al, run. There's another issue I like to bring up. I'll just bring these couple issues real quickly. And one is about, and I saw, you know, there was a piece about, you know, universal health care. And I saw that most Americans are for universal health care. Sort of funny that they're talking about this now, because I remember back in the heyday when Clinton had became president and Hillary was researching and had her task force about implementing some sort of change in our healthcare system here in the United States. And they questioned about healthcare, universal healthcare, what can we do to change it? The costs and a lot of most people don't even have normal health care, and those that do, it's like a joke. I mean, myself, I know that you go in and then, you know, you can run up if you have to be hospitalized, you can come up $500 or more, thousands of dollars for just the deductibles and the co-pays. Then who has that money if you're being paid $7, $10, $12 an hour or even more? Even if you're making $20, that ends up, how can you afford it? If you have family and kids to feed, then you go bankrupt, and you can't go bankrupt now because they changed the bankruptcy laws. We can't go bankrupt, but it's a lot harder. So my question is, what's the situation with healthcare? Are we really getting that much better in the United States? Now, those who are listening from overseas are probably going, oh, God, you think in England our healthcare is any better? I don't know. I remember living in Israel during the 80s for 6 years, and they had a great healthcare system. I mean, my God, what a model. basically everybody was covered right from the get-go. It's included within their taxes. Of course, they pay a lot of taxes over there, but in America, they think they don't pay a lot of taxes, but you do. You have indirect taxes. It ends up being, you may think you're only paying 30-40%, but you're really paying 60-70% of your monies and proceeds end up going toward taxes, because there's tax upon tax, and then the taxes on gas, and tax on utilities, and tax on that. And they've got a lot of hidden taxes, too. So anyway, in Israel, they have like a system where you just have basic health care. And this, by the way, includes all people, whether Jew or Arab, contrary to Mr. Carter talking, or President Carter talking about apartheid. They have a lot of rights. The Arabs and Israelis are pretty much the same, including the social welfare system, the same. Everything is pretty much the same. But you have a basic, everybody's covered. And the basic coverage is, you would go to a hospital or, you know, a major hospital to go see a doctor or whatever. Then you pay a little bit more. And I remember back then I was paying like $200-$300 a year. And that would give me what they call like, it would be sort of like a clinic visit, where we actually had a clinic at our village. And I remember even, the pills, you know, the medicines, if you needed drugs, or it was like a joke. It was like agorot. It was not even pennies. To go get your that was your copay. You get these little stamps. And then you go further on, it's called Maccabi, I remember that, and then if you want to pay a little bit more, I think that was like $100, $200 more, which I didn't have because I didn't live in the city, so it really wasn't pertinent for me, but I could see somebody doing that. And it's called Maccabi, and you'd actually go to private doctors, visit private doctors, which is sort of like what we have in the U.S. now. We go visit private doctors, and to some extent. But on average, people are paying between $200 to $300 for their health, besides their employer. Figure that out. You add that up together. How much money is really going in? How much profit is being made off to take care of that individual lying on the table, or you're sick or you're ill? You know, sort of, I think, pretty sick to make a profit on somebody who's being, you know, it's like, let's say, should we perform surgery, we make more money or less money on doing this operation? Hey, maybe we give him these pills because we can actually make more money, and then we get the kickback from the drug companies. But how much more profit do they need to get? How much money they're going to get? Oh, what's their focal point if there's no profit? Oh, believe me, you can set up terms where they will make money. But when they're making 500, 600, 1,000% profit, yeah, they do have their monies that go into research. But people don't realize how much money comes from the government, from your taxes, from you again, that pays the drug company to do their research. So they get it two ways. They get the huge profit, and they also get the money from the governments to do their research. So it's all about, again, the dollar, just like global warming, you know. And I believe that in America you have rights, and one of your rights should be health care. And like I said, back in the 90s, I remember that situation where Hillary Clinton was trying to find out about it, and then, of course, they went after her over it. So that's just my question. And then my last other statement, I just want to know about, when will the last soldier die as a result of Bush and Cheney's mistake? Just a thought. You know, I keep on watching how much another one dies. I mean, I feel sorry for the last soldier who died or got wounded or even before that in Vietnam. And here we are in the same situation, or even probably worse. And then I wonder about Iran wanting nukes. And then we have the so-called progressives with their Chamberlain papers on one hand, and we have the neocons holding the Iranian war plan on the other side. What does there do? We can't be stupid. We can't be also naive at the same time. Oh, yeah, maybe the students and the people of Iran can help. Just a thought. Oh, yeah, they might be able to do something about that problem. without being the moron to walk around with the Chamberlain papers or the idiot who says, hey, we'll just slow down there, we'll just nuke the entire Iran out of existence, and that'll take care of our thing. But just a thought, the students and the people of Iran think they don't like their government. Just a thought. I think they're upset about living a totalitarian society where you've got to believe in their way or the highway. So, I'm going to end my last part of the show, so I've encompassed so much and so much diversity within the show today. You know, I went from the Middle East a little bit all the way through global warming and, you know, healthcare a little bit. But I want to end with spirituality, and to some extent, which I will plan to do a show with entirely on spirituality down the line. Keep on saying down the line, next show, maybe next show, I know. But I want to emphasize what I believe what's a common, and that all things are, we have to look things in an infinite pattern. It's called, in Hebrew, they call it Ein Sof, which is what, termination of God. It's almost like Kabbalistic sense of true understanding of God is Ein Sof, which is sort of funny because in physics, in quantum physics, that is what is infinite, is beyond, is infinite, which sort of correlates, which has the same thing, which are ironically. And I believe in all major religions believe in the same pattern of an infinite God, infinite, that we're all connected, infinite. So if the infinite is the truth, that's our mythology we must apply toward our sciences and our methodologies and outlooks on things on an infinite pattern. If we look upon the infinite patterns, we also true see what is real. And maybe an infinite pattern by looking at things beyond infinite. And like I said, beyond the infinite, because as I'm using the word infinite, that is bringing to a finite understanding, because it's even beyond that. Then we might be able to relate to our fellow species that are floating around the spatial patterns within our global, known as UFOs or extraterrestrials, and other planets, other systems. And maybe we'll see that what is really happening. So it is understanding that on a spiritual level, everything is all infinite, actually beyond the infinite, beyond the Ein Sof, or in Hebrew they say the Ein, which is even beyond the infinite. And I believe that one real reason why we're here, because I do believe in reincarnation, like I said before, we do come and come back and forth. We come, constantly return. We die, then we reincarnate. Our spirit chooses within our pattern, within our life, and we reincarnate. We choose an embodiment when we come back, and then go through the karmic situations. And then we colorize. It's almost like a if you were to take the little coloring painting thing that had color by numbers, we basically choose our life, so we choose our patterns. So in spiritual sense, we do choose when we reincarnate. So what happens when we reincarnate? What's our basic element we're supposed to be doing? Well, I think one of the most important is to heal oneself, to bring up our vibration through love, trying to walk toward the light, increasing it toward love, like I said, and always having that great thirst for wisdom and knowledge, knowing the truth and understanding about the universe and things. You know, it's sort of funny because wisdom and knowledge is always out there. We've always known it. It's just actually really waking up to it. It's like, oh, wow. Have you ever noticed that when you learn something, it's really just a remembrance? It's something we've always already known? Because we already know that a lot of the knowledge that's already out there, it's just a remembering. We seem to forget. We even seem to forget, have short-term memory, long-term, short-term memory, and we also have problems with our memory in the future. I mean, I even, as I get older, God, I sometimes forget. But that is what is wisdom, just remembering what we've already known, basics and knowledge, and seeking for. But the basic, most important thing is learning to increase our vibration with love, to heal ourselves, to help others. Because by doing helping others, and not to help others because you just want to cover up with to help yourself, You know, if you're helping somebody just because you don't want to deal with your own issues, that's not really the true sense of love, because you're basically hurting yourself. Even though you're helping somebody else, you're just covering, you're making it worse for yourself, and you're not really dealing with the true love sense. So if you, it's like an unconditional love for yourself will vibrate to the other person. You can't reach, there's no void. That's all an illusion. When people say, oh my God, I feel there's an empty thing in me. That's, you've created that in your own mind, but that's not the truth. It's always there. It's like Jesus said in St. Thomas, and I'm paraphrasing because I forget the phrase now exactly, but it's basically, you know, if you don't have it, you will die, but then you've always had it. You can't live without it, and it's there. So whatever path you do choose, whether it's the Islamic way, the Judaic way, the Christian way, the Buddhist way, the Native American way, or just your own way, because we all have our ways, even the agnostic way, or even the atheist way, the true path is just the main course for your lifetime at this time, is to heal yourself, to love, to heal with love. Wisdom. This is God's path of light. Run, Al, run! Oh, am I insinuating somebody should run for president? I don't know. I like Hillary. I like Barack. But damn, can you imagine Al Gore running for president? Boy, would that put a wrench. I don't know. If he was president, yeah, he may not be able to put all his energy in dealing with global warming, or could he? So, these are all concerns. And like I said, it's all connected. Everything I'm talking about from many events, and I may jump from one thing to another, it's because they're all interrelated no matter where I talk from. It's like whether I'm talking about the Middle East or the Europeans or America, if I find something that's happening in the other world event, like Darfur or something. These are all things that we're all connected and all dealing in, all situations on a very simple basis. It's like spirituality, everybody makes it so complex. Oh my God, they make like a Bible this thick and a Bhagavad Gita this thick and a Quran this thick. But it's really not complex. It's made to be complex. Out of control. Spirituality is very simple. Very, very simple. If you look things from the infinite without trying to determine what the infinite is, it's there it is. I'm ready, almost ready to close up. I got no, I only have so much on my sheet.
I got you. Okay. All right.
But I'll finish up and wrap it up in a bit. So, right now.
Not a problem.
All right. So, as I was saying, it's all interrelated. And, you know, and like I recap on all things, you know, I wish that the understanding within the Middle East with the Palestinians and Israelis, that my Arab brothers and my Jewish brothers will put their hands together and shake, that there's no more hatred, no spewing of hate, no teaching your kids. It's our way or the highway. We will annihilate them. There's no annihilation. If you're a son of Isaac or son of Ishmael, you're both cousins. So it's abomination in the name of Allah. It's abomination in the name of your father, Abraham, to want to kill each other, to slaughter each other. And those who preach it, they're your enemy. Those who preach your hatred are the enemy of Allah. Those who preach to kill your brother the Jew are an enemy of Allah. Those who preach to ostracize and belittle your Arab neighbor, they are not in the way of Elohim. And those who are placed, who are racist enough, who say, oh, they're just like animals, the Arabs are like animals, that's a lie. They've been integrated and taught to hate. But that can change. People change to become a loving nation. I remember the German people are not a hateful nation. If they were encompassed to hate the Jew, and look at them now. The Japanese were so, like, almost like enveloped with it in a racist realm, thinking they were the higher order. The country looked down upon the Chinese, looked down upon the Koreans, in a very bellicose way. But look at them now. People change. Societies can change. It takes love and proper and education showing the loving between peoples. Even Malcolm X changed. He hated the white man. He looked at the white man as the blue-eyed devil. And then when he went to the Mecca and he was trying to reach out through a true Islamic way and showing the brotherly love, he realized we are all people. We are all the same. We are all brothers. So people can change. Because they can take a choice. Even if they're walking toward the dark, they can turn and go toward the light. This is our choice. And this is by this opportunity of choice is where I talk about healing oneself as a society, as an individual. And moving toward that vibrational love. Because this is why we're here. We're not just here to eat, take a dump in the woods, feed our kids, have more kids, watch our grandkids grow up and die. I mean, that's one great aspect, part of life, but the real aspect, why are you here? Not to recycle the same patterns. Don't be the same merry-go-round, round and round we go and do the same thing over and over. Because if you do the same thing, you just come back and you're going to reap the same lesson over and over. These are lessons in life. If you haven't learned the lesson, the universe will give you that lesson again and again and again. So we must break out of that cycle, just like in the Middle East, tick for tack. If the terrorism, for example, stopped, and no more Katyushas, no more any rockets flying into Israel, and no more terrorism, and a boss reached out to Obar, and they said, hey, you know what? We removed our arms. No more peace. There's peace. And then the Israelis see that with sincerity, and he says, okay, we'll move down the walls. I remember, what was it? How close was their peace between the Israelis and Palestinians, and then Arafat pulled out. How close? Oh, that's not written, by the way, President Carter's book, Apartheid, what was pulled out. It was actually Arafat who was the real problem. Of course, he had billions of dollars. He wanted to keep the game going and take some more. But just think how close that was. We can reach that same level again. You know, they used to have a peace between the Lebanese within themselves. But you have the Hezbollah, who are basically the little puppets for Iran and the Syrians and trying to cause their own destruction. They've tried very hard and I remember how Lebanon is, being everybody's on my God better than your God, from going from that level trying to somehow formulate a government. We're all different. But you can't simply continue the same pattern. And then again, on global warming, here's our opportunity to unite humanity to do something as a universal goal to protect and save our Mother Earth that feeds us, that protects us from getting off course to the point where massive destruction upon not just humans alike, but animals and species alike. This is our Garden of Eden that God gave us to take care of. So I like to sum up everything. And by the way, again, if anybody would like, they can check my website out, www.andrewfetter.com. They can check out talks about me, and of course my book, which is When the Angels Have Risen, which gets into some of the things I've discussed now are in within my book, but it's more of a novel, and I know that you'll definitely enjoy it. You'll think you're in a movie set, watching a movie. So with that, run, Al, run! With that, I'd like to sum up what I have to, my program. Give me a couple extra minutes here. I just want to say God bless you all, and perhaps in the near future, we'll look at things in a more common way, that we're all of humanity, we're all the same, we're all infinitely and beyond the infinite, we're all connected, we're all part of the tree of life. And with that, God bless you. Thank you.